Welcome to the IAM Radio Network, featuring a choice coaching show offering skilled life coaching services from youth to adult. And now, here's the relationship whisperer herself and your host, Katie Garmazon. Get ready to go. Interactive.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining me on the Choice Coaching Show today on the IAM Radio TV Network. I'm your host, Coach Katie Garmazon, and today I will be joined by Lizanne LeClaire, Trauma Coach. So for those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, I'll tell you a bit about my backstory. I grew up in an abusive environment, and at the age of 16, I became homeless. I lived on the streets for just over a year, and then was taken in by a family at the age of 17 and a half. At the age of 25, I realized that my life wasn't what I wanted it to be. I wasn't doing anything that I could be proud of with my life. So I made the choice to change. And in order to do that, I felt like I had to pick myself apart. And so what I did was I sat down and asked a friend to just listen to me. And I created two piles. And one pile was all the things I loved about myself. And in the other pile was all the things that I didn't love about myself. When I was done, I was really disappointed to see that there were more things about myself that I didn't love than there were that I loved. So what I did was I picked up the pile of things that I loved about myself and I put them back and then made the conscious decision to fill all of the empty holes with things that I could love about myself. So I moved forward to do that, and I found coaching. And by using coaching tools and creating coaching programs based on my own experiences, I was able to build myself up into a person that I can be proud of. And today, I am the CEO of Choice Coaching Canada. I work hard to help others find the same path that I found and teach them how to walk it. I have really good friends that are there for me when I need them. I have a wonderful family that I love more than anything. And I have a life that I can be proud of. I'm writing self-help books and coaching people every day. And it's just, you know, being able to become someone that I could be proud of is a huge accomplishment for me. So today on the show, trauma coach Lizanne LeClaire and I are going to be discussing domestic violence. We both have a personal experience with this, and I'll let Lizanne tell you her story as we get into the show. And we both know it from a professional perspective as well, as we tend to work with people who, you know, have been in this situation or are trying to get out of it, which is Lizanne's case. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my very special guest today, trauma coach Lizanne LeClaire. Thank you so much for being here with me today, Lizanne.
Thank you, Katie. Thanks for having me.
So why don't you start by telling the listeners a little bit about you, who you are, and you know, what you've been through in your life.
Well, this is a difficult subject to talk about, first of all. I've been through a lot of trauma and loss and abuse and domestic violence, and I got to a point where I thought that I wasn't going to be coming out of it with my full sanity.
That makes sense.
So I made a choice from that point to fight for my life and fight for my health and find myself and stop trying to be who other people expected me to be. And I started searching out spirituality and counseling and all kinds of services, anything I could actually get my hands on to try to get out of my situation. So I've the last probably 10 years, I've been working really hard on researching and looking at what's out there, belief systems, counseling, coaching, Al-Anon, you know, different self-help groups and organizations. And I found a common truth, I guess you can call them, where if you don't love yourself, then it's really hard to have a sense of identity and to know what makes you happy and to be strong and still and then help others around you. That first starts with yourself. So I've worked hard on that, and also forgiveness for some bad choices I made.
In your domestic violence relationship, what was your breaking point? Was there one, or was it a series of events that led up to it?
You know, people that are in a domestic violent relationship often aren't sure that it is abusive. They have an idea, but they've been groomed so much that it appears normal. And they've isolated you so much that it appears that nobody can understand anyways, that you're the only two that can understand each other. So it really becomes a codependency as well. So it's very, very tricky. And of course,
And hang on, folks. This is Jeff. I'm the producer of the Katie Show, the Coach Coaching Show. We'll be right back with you. We've got one minor technical difficulty. We'll get Katie and her guest, Lizanne, right back on the air. Thank you for your patience.
Hi, so we seem to be having some technical difficulties, but we've got it under control now. So where were we, Lupin? I think we were talking about the reason why women stay in an abusive relationship. And we were saying that it's because the first time they get hit is what you were saying, they stay after that. So what happens is the first time they get hit, up until this point, their partner has been a good person and has done good things for them and, you know, has been sweet and says things like, this is one of the things that you should watch out for. They either say we were meant for each other or no one could ever love you like I do. And that is actually a tool used to diminish your self-esteem, making you believe that there's no one else out there that could love you, but we don't realize that. And so what happens is we let the first time go, and then the second time it happens, we feel guilty because we didn't leave the first time. We figure it's too late. So is that accurate?
Well, there's some of that, and there's some other reasons as well. And also, it's also men that can be abused as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of times people will stay for financial reasons, because there's children involved, because there's society demands on you, because of your religious beliefs. There are several different reasons why people can rationalize and stay in that abusive situation. We see it a lot in immigrants as well. So there are a lot of reasons for that. And a while ago you asked me about a breaking point.
Yeah.
I was thinking on that, and, you know, I nearly lost my life in 2009, December 29th. I remember it quite clearly. And I was being choked. And I remember thinking, wow, this is how I'm going to die.
Wow.
And, you know, I had the phone in my hand, but I didn't call. And the next morning I got up and I went to work like nothing happened. And I was in shock. but I didn't know that at the time. And I waited. I asked for my partner to go to counseling at that time. And he agreed, and I set up the appointment. Of course, it was the honeymoon phase, so anything to save his spot was a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So we did that for a while, and then I invited a friend over to stay with me. And although I never discussed with her the extent of any abuse or anything going on, she had an idea. And she was the only long-term friend that had stuck around throughout the entire relationship.
Yeah.
Because most of my friends would be pushed away, or doubt was cast into me about my friends, and
yeah.
You know, I was isolated. But this one woman stayed constant in my life all the time, and she knew there was something wrong, so she asked to come and stay for a couple of weeks, so she stayed. And during that time, you know, my partner at the time was behaving, so... But then she took me aside and she said, "Is this how you live every day?" And I said, "Yes, but this is really good because you're here and he's behaving and this is pretty good." And she said, "You know, someone's going to lose their life here and you need to end this now." And that was 4 months after that day in December. So even after nearly having a near-death experience, I didn't leave right away. So it's very, very complicated and very hard to explain to people that have not been in that situation. From the outside, it looks completely different.
Well, and it's funny because earlier you said that a lot of people may not realize that they're in that situation. I actually have a story from my childhood that I can share in regards to that. I was about 15, and I had just, you know, taken a beating, I guess is what I'd call it, from my dad. And he went and took a nap after he was done. And I remember going into the fridge to get a bag of milk, and there was a number on the bag, and it was Kids Help Phone. So I remember grabbing the phone and dialing the number and sitting down on the floor. And I remember a woman answered the phone, and she said, "Kids Helpline, you know, so-and-so speaking, how can I help you today?" And so I said, "I think I'm being abused, but I'm not sure." Because this has been going on since as long as I can remember, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, "Okay." So she asked questions, you know, "Is it a parent?" And I said, "Yes." "Are they hitting you?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "When was the last time they hit you?" And I said, "About 15, 20 minutes ago." And she said, "Well, can you tell me what happened?" Because back then it was okay to spank your child and whatnot. So I told her what happened. And it was the longest silence I've ever experienced in my life. I don't think she knew what to say to me. So this is what she came back with. She said, "I'm not generally supposed to say things like this, but I feel if I don't say it this way, you may not get it." She said, "If your father hasn't killed you yet, he's going to kill you. You need to get out of that house." She said, "Where is he now?" I said, "He's sleeping." She said, "Do you have any siblings?" I said, "Yeah, I have an older sister and a younger sister." She said, "Are they home?" I said, "My older sister's gone out with friends, but my little sister's here." She's like, "Okay. Do you have somewhere safe you can go?" I said, "Yeah, my friend Ryan, a friend of mine who had walked up to the front door and seen my dad hurting me at one point, told me if I ever wanted help to go to his place, and him and his mom would help." So I said, "Yeah, I can go to my friend's house." And she said, "Okay, so you need to take your sister with you, because if he sees that you're gone, he may get angry and take it out on her." So I grabbed my little sister. I remember flushing the toilet to try and drown out any noise of a door opening. I don't even know why I thought that would, but that's what I did. We ran out the back door, jumped the fence, and ran to my friend's place. Well, him and his mom couldn't believe the state that I was in. And so she called the cops and CAS. And I remember at the point when they were done, you know, checking me out and all of that and taking their pictures, I had a complete breakdown. I was so calm and cool until that point, and then I was terrified. Because all I could think is, my dad's going to kill me.
You know, so I had no idea when I called this woman. I said, I think I'm being abused, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't understand how I didn't know that I was being abused. You know?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's pretty common in those situations.
So then how can we get the word out? How can we educate people more on domestic violence?
Well, I think we need to have more coaches doing this kind of work. Because, and especially coaches that have experienced abuse, because they have great survival skills and they've learned a lot of tools. And they won't judge you, which is very important because people are afraid to talk about it because they get ridiculed, laughed at, people don't understand. You know, to them it's so simple.
Just get out.
Yeah, just get out. That's what they say. And they'll give you the theory, but they don't know the abuse and the manipulation.
They don't know the struggle.
No. They don't know the anxiety, and they don't know the triggers. And they can read and write about it.
But you can't learn it from a book.
But no, it's not. It's not. It's not so black and white.
No, it's not. There's so much that people don't know about what it's like to be in that situation. I mean, even for us, to tell someone to get out, I mean, at least we understand why they're afraid to, why they don't want to, you know, what threats are being made to them, you know, because, and that's the thing, is it's not that they've never tried to leave. It's when they get to that breaking point, they try to leave, but their partner hangs on, doesn't let go, makes threats that they're going to hunt them down and kill them, or they're going to keep the kids. That's one I hear a lot,
mm-hmm.
is that they're going to take the kids. What mother wants to leave her kids behind? So this person manipulates them in every way possible, uses everything they can think of against the person being abused in order to keep them there. And yet, like you said earlier, men get abused too, but unfortunately it's probably not that it's not as common, but it's not as talked about. Men are less likely to come forward if they're in an abusive relationship. But they'll put you down, they call you names. I mean, what of this did you experience?
Oh boy. That was a daily occurrence. You get to the point where your esteem is completely gone and you're anxious to do anything, even decide what you want to wear that day, or any other day, because of the comments that get made. So you're anxious about everything. Everything becomes difficult. Every word you say becomes difficult. And you get to a point where you don't talk anymore. You get to a point where you retreat into yourself, and a lot of times it causes depression. And then a lot of times the victims will go and seek medical help because their partners are saying you're crazy and you need to go get help. And they blame it on the victim. So that victim starts to get unstable and emotional and up and downs. And, you know, you start thinking to yourself, maybe I'm going crazy. Maybe I am depressed. Maybe I need some medication. And next thing you know, you're going down that road of psychiatrists and psychiatry and prescriptions and things that you may not need. And it is a defense mechanism as well to become almost as aggressive as your abuser, because you're trying to survive. I remember a lot of times pretending I was gone to bed early. I was tired. 9 o'clock at night, I'd be in bed, laying awake, just waiting for sleep to come.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to have to deal with the abuse or the alcohol or the, you know, what was going on.
Because you knew it was coming.
Yeah, and I would find any way to avoid it.
And by avoiding, well, when you start coming up with ways to avoid it, you just start avoiding all of it. Every aspect of it. When he gets mad at you and hits you, you avoid dealing with that. You know, when he chokes you, you avoid dealing with that. When he puts you down and makes you feel like you're worth less than you are, you avoid dealing with that. And you just keep avoiding it. It's almost like you build barriers around all of these different situations, all of the different things that are happening, so you don't have to think about it. You don't have to, you know. And then when you talk about them alienating you from your friends and family, that is something that happens in, well, so far every abusive relationship I've seen, where they push your close friends away, then they start to push your family away, and they do this by saying, did you see the way they talked to me tonight, or they're disrespectful, or they don't treat you right, you deserve to be treated better. And it gets to a point where, you know, this partner is really the only person in your life who cares about you and treats you right. So, you know, it's worth it to put all of your time and energy into giving them what they want and making them happy. And that's where the codependency comes in, because your whole world revolves around making them happy, making sure they have everything they want and need in order to be happy. And there's been some situations where I've spoken to women in abusive relationships where even sex, they don't feel like doing it, but they do anyways because it makes their partner happy, and they don't want their partner to feel like they don't matter or like they've been rejected. And then there's also points where if they don't give it to their partner will take it, which is unbelievable. You know, the fact that we can be broken down to such a point that, you know, we could allow someone to do that to us, but it does happen. And it, once you get so deep into that cycle, it is so hard to get out, and it is not just as easy as leaving. You can't just walk away from that, because there's still part of you that holds on to the good person you think at this point your partner is, but they're not that good person, and they're going to continue to hurt you. When they do something bad, doing something good to follow it doesn't make up for it. You don't deserve to be hurt. You aren't worthless. You deserve better. But people in these situations, they don't see it. They blame themselves. It's their fault. They should have made supper the way they wanted to. It should have been on the table when they wanted it to be. They should have kept the kids quiet because they knew their partner was sleeping. Like, all of these things. I remember my dad, when he was working night shift and he had to sleep during the day, we pretty much had to leave the house. My mom's responsibility was to keep us quiet. And if we didn't, well, holy did we get it. You know, and the reason why a lot of women stay in these relationships too is financially. Yeah, they say we have kids together, and I know a lot of people see that as excuses, but it's not an excuse. They truly believe that it's better for their child to have both parents than just one. They believe that. That's 100% true to them. Mm-hmm. And then financially, because they've been put into a world where they're so completely dependent on their partner, that how can they leave? Right?
Yeah. You bring back a whole bunch of memories. It starts with one aspect, then another. It just ends up, they control your entire life, and they control your mind, pretty much. They're inside your head all the time. And it's really, really hard to get out of. And, you know, even when you get out of it, it's hard to stay out of it.
Yeah.
Because you kind of, you know that saying where, you know, you keep your friends close but your enemies closer?
Yeah.
And you kind of know when the storm is coming when you're with them.
Yeah.
So you can kind of, you have this false feeling of controlling the situation because they're with you. And you can maybe soften the blow or not make it so hard.
Yeah.
And when you leave that, it's unknown.
You have no idea when they're going to show up,
it's
or where they're going to show up.
Or unknown.
Yeah.
And it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And not only that, the peace that you get when you left that relationship is unbearable. It's uncomfortable. It's stressful.
Yeah. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it never drops.
I know.
Because you're by yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
But and you're trying to figure this out,
yeah,
because it's so confusing. You know, okay, this is what I need. I need to be out of this relationship. I need to be alone. This is what normal life is like. So I hear. But I can't deal with it.
No, because you've become comfortable with being completely controlled. So you don't know how to function in a stable, healthy relationship to the point where you'll self-sabotage. You know, if a relationship is going well, you'll do something to screw it up. Because for me, I dated guys that were abusive after my dad left, because if they weren't hitting me, I didn't think they loved me. Now I realize how backwards that thinking was. But at that point, and I believe that, you know, dating these guys, if I could get them to change their ways, then in some way it was like I was saving my dad. I was helping him to change and helping him to better himself, you know, like changing them gave me hope. You know, I haven't had a relationship with my dad since I was 17, and I don't ever plan on having a relationship with him. He'll never meet my kids, you know, and it's sad because I lose out on that parental relationship. And I spent a lot of years blaming my mom for all of it. But it wasn't her fault. She was in the situation you were in. And though you got out, you're one of few. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll pick this conversation up.
Hello, amazing listeners to the I Am Radio TV network. We thank you so very much for being here with us today. We wanted to let you know we have an amazing opportunity coming up. We have available broadcast time. If you are a coach, author, speaker, or a business person looking to get your message out to the entire planet, then please get in touch with us as soon as possible, and we will go over the various levels of participation in our network. Again, we thank you for being with us here today on the I Am Radio TV Network. Now, get ready to go interactive.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Choice Coaching Show. Before the break, Coach Lizanne LeClaire and I were talking about domestic violence, both professionally and from our own personal experience. And before we took break, I was talking about how for a very, very long time, I blamed my mom for the abuse, because I realize now it was because she cared enough that me blaming her would affect her, but my dad didn't. When I was 17, my dad told me he wasn't my real father, that I wasn't his daughter, and it's basically been like that ever since. And I know that that's because out of all of us, I was the strongest one. I was the one who had the guts to stand up to him, to put a stop to the abuse. I was the one who stood my ground and refused to allow him back into my life. I've tried having, you know, it's not without effort, because I found myself over the years following trying to reach out to him on Facebook or have some kind of a conversation with him, only to be slapped away and ignored. I remember getting a phone call from my sister one day begging me to email my dad, because if I didn't, he said he was going to stop talking to her, which is unbelievably manipulative and cruel. But I did it for my sister because I love her. So I sent him a message, told him how I was doing, and that we haven't had any communication since. He'll never meet my kids. He'll never be in my life. But, I mean, that's my situation, right? But I remember when I would get into these abusive relationships, it felt like when they hit me, they loved me, which is very twisted, I know. And it's not the right way to look at it, but it was how I felt, because growing up in the home that I grew up in, the only time we really got any attention is when he was hitting us. So, I mean, it would make sense that I would view that as being love. So what do you think, how do you think you ended up finding yourself in your situation?
Well, as a child, too, I also had a difficult childhood. And I remember those words, actually, coming from my mother.
Really? Yeah, you know, if I didn't love you, I wouldn't do this.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, those are beliefs that were instilled into us, and it took us a long time to learn that those were not good beliefs. It's not a good belief system. And it's not the truth. And hurting people is not showing love. It's, in fact, the opposite. And it might have to do with that person's self-esteem and their need to be on top because their self-esteem is so low. And they may have mental health issues coupled with that.
Yeah.
But they know how to pick their victim.
Isn't that crazy how they do that?
Because they find someone that can see the light in them and the hope and the potential that they have.
Yeah.
And they know that. And of course, we're the women or the men that care too much, that want to help, that get stuck in these cycles.
Yeah.
Because we don't keep our boundaries. We're constantly letting people step over our boundaries. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
And then a little bit. And then a little bit more.
Yeah.
Until your boundaries vanish.
Until they're throwing us up against the wall.
That's right.
Yeah. True.
So it's very, very complicated, difficult issue. And, you know, also when I was talking about getting out and being uncomfortable in the silence, because you're working on fight or flight mode, because you have symptoms of post-traumatic stress and you've been a victim of trauma, you're running always hypervigilant, and your body's used to that, releasing those chemicals. So it's very difficult to deal with the peace. So I know that I found some ways to deal with that. I remember sitting at my window and constantly looking out the blind every 5 minutes.
Yeah, paranoia.
Not that I thought he would show up, but I was just uncomfortable in my house in the silence. And I just kept looking for something to go wrong. So I would be looking out that shade every 5 minutes. That went on for weeks. It was so difficult. So I started looking for things to do, things to occupy my mind. And I picked up art, which was very helpful. And I picked up spirituality again, which I had left aside. And I tried to meditate. Well, I thought I was no good at meditating because the peace was so difficult to deal with. But, you know, I do it for about 5 minutes, you know. And I didn't realize that that's how you start meditating because we can't just start meditating and be perfect at it all of a sudden. It
yeah.
takes a lot of work.
Well, and that you saying, oh, well, I'm not good at it, stuff like that, did you ever stop to think that that was his voice in your head telling you just couldn't do it, you couldn't do it right, you weren't good enough, stuff like that, only to find out you were doing it right all along?
Yeah, but not only his voice, but many people's voices all through my childhood, from my mother to the teachers to whatever environment I was in. You know, there's always someone, a bully or whatever. Those voices do stick with you, and they play a part in your self-esteem, definitely.
Yeah.
But, you know, the first time I realized that I wanted out of that relationship, I went to an Al-Anon meeting, and there were several people around the table, all different ages, which kind of surprised me. There was some younger than me, some older than me, some much older than me. But the funny thing was they were all saying the exact same thing. That their abusers would say to them. And I thought to myself, wow, did they all go to the same school?
Did somebody teach them how to do this?
Because it was all the same information.
Yeah.
And some of these women or men stayed with their partners. And they were married for different amounts of years, like 40-some years, 3 years, 10 years. It was all different. But they were all saying the same thing. And I could see myself in those older women speaking, and they're saying what I'm saying now. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't want to be in the same boat when I'm 70 years old.
Yeah.
And still waiting for a miracle to happen.
Waiting for him to become the person you think he is. The person, because you're right, we do see potential in people. And we want to do everything we can to help guide them to it, to help them reach that potential. Because it's such a beautiful potential, you know, and they could be great and they could be happy and it could be a, you know, a happy, wonderful family skipping down the road together holding hands. But it's a pipe dream.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot change them unless they want to change. And in my experience and in my many, many years of dealing with this, they don't want to. And they never will. You know, my dad will never change. He will always be the man he is. Your ex-partner will never change. He will always be the man he is. But look at you. You walked away. You got out. How did you do that? What the first day, the first week, the first month out, how did you do it? How did you get away from him? Because, I mean, did he just disappear? Did he just go away? Or did he make it difficult?
Gosh, no. You know, it was, it's so much personal information to share, eh?
Yeah, but the client.
You know, it was very, very troubling because the blame was always placed on me.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was getting stalked. I was getting threatened. You know, it was threatened homicide or suicide or kidnapping or stalking or looking through the windows or, you know, withholding any support at all financially, or even not even picking up the children as a way of trying to manipulate the situation to get me back into that cycle so that I would be too tired.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have enough money to be able to continue on my own.
And that you would have to go back to him.
So those first few months were extremely difficult. On top of, you know, trying to deal with all of that and then trying to deal with your insecurities and being alone and being in a codependent relationship and all of a sudden you don't have a relationship and you don't know who you are and it's just, like, overwhelming.
Yeah.
But you know what? I put my faith forward. I started to go down that spiritual path. I prayed like you would not believe for strength to get up the next day and do it all again. And thank goodness I had friends. I had that one friend I was talking about earlier that stayed with me for years and years. And I made new friends. I met Katie. Met you.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, even though I was kind of wounded,
yeah,
I still, you know, tried to make relationships,
yeah,
because I know I'm a good person.
Yeah.
And I know that I can't, there are other good people out there and I can build a relationship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, through coaching, that was helpful, very helpful, because, you know, counseling is okay, but there's no support in the middle.
Yeah.
No, you get your appointment and you wait 2 weeks or 3 weeks for your next appointment.
Yeah.
If you miss that appointment, you're waiting another 2-3 weeks for your appointment. And in between, there's no support
system. Yeah.
So having a coach was awesome because I could bounce back some ideas and I could talk about things in between the sessions.
Yeah.
Which I thought was helpful.
Well, and the another thing I like about coaching when it comes to these situations is you get out of it, but what do? How do you move forward? How do you break free from this past and create the future you want? That's where coaching comes in, because that's what we do. Now, your specialty is trauma, because that's what you know best. You know trauma and you know overcoming trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to get back on your feet and how to take your life back and take your power back and how to finally build the life that you've been dreaming about but have never been able to achieve, have never been able to reach. You put it within their reach.
Well, I used, like I said, I used art. So intuitive art was very, very powerful because there are things I could not verbalize and I didn't want to. I don't want to sit here and tell people all of my life story and all the abuse I've been through because it's horrible.
But it's healing for you as well as for other spirits.
But through the art, I can do that.
Yeah.
It's insightful.
Yeah.
And when I'm ready to talk about something, then I can go see a coach.
Who will push you out of your comfort
and
zone.
And I can discuss it. I can say, you know, look what I drew. This is what this means, you know. And it's easier because you're talking to a canvas.
Yeah.
And you're putting your feelings down. You're using that paint or you're using that clay or you're using whatever.
It's an emotional expression from your soul, from your being, from who you are. It's the one way that you can be completely honest with yourself without worrying.
Without expectation, without perfection,
without
this color means that thing or
the
other thing. It's just, you're just letting everything out onto that canvas or that piece of art.
And when it's done, no one can tell you it's not good enough because an expression of who you are, a true expression, is always good enough. And I remember you saying that you don't have to have any art skill whatsoever to attend an intuitive art therapy class, which I think is great.
No, goodness, I couldn't even draw a stick man. I thought. Now I have these beautiful pieces of art.
I have one sitting on my bookshelf. I know you guys can't see it, but it's beautiful. What I'll do is I'll take a picture of it after and I'll put it up on my Facebook so you can all see the beautiful art that Lizanne created as an expression of who she is. It's amazing. Okay, so you meet somebody who is in the situation that you were in and they're looking for help, okay? What do you say to them? They're still in the abusive relationship, and you know how hard it is to get them just to make the choice to walk away.
Well, that is the key. I am not there to make them make the choice to walk away.
No.
I'm there to help them understand what kind of situation they're in, they find themselves in.
Yeah.
And to have them look at it honestly, and figure out what is going on, what is keeping them there, first of all.
Yeah.
Because it's hard enough to do that, just that alone. So they will be able to look at it.
Yeah.
And like I said, when I started to go to a group and I recognized that people were saying the same thing, then I knew I'm not alone here.
No.
I'm not making this up.
No, you're not. Crazy.
This is an actual abusive situation.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's information that they don't have.
Yeah.
They're kept away from. They're locked away.
Yeah.
And if you can start sharing that information without judging them, without saying, you know, you should be out, you should leave, that's not the key. The key is to have a safety plan.
Yes.
The key is to be ready in case you need to make that choice to leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just help them prepare.
Yeah.
And think that they're not alone, that you're not going to be the one that runs away, you know, like because you don't understand what they're going through. You're going to be there for them. And when they're ready to make that switch, then you're there for them.
Yeah.
So that's where I'd like to help people build from not a perspective that you need to leave, but figuring out where you are.
Yeah.
And what's going on and what's abuse and what is not abuse, because most of the time, like you said, we do not know.
No,
we do
we
not
don't.
Know what abuse is.
No.
We just simply do not know, because the smaller things we let go got bigger and bigger, and the abuse is worse and worse. So we know if we're getting punched in the face, that's probably abuse.
Yeah.
But if we're getting pressure pointed and held onto the ground, that might be play fighting.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I know.
It's difficult because there's a lack of information, and I think to give the information to the people is going to help empower them.
Well, and I remember being in a relationship where, because, okay, people will always say, well, why didn't they tell anyone? When you hear about a woman who, you know, was killed by her spouse, I guarantee you, in the beginning, she told her friends. But then when her friend said, oh, my God, he's abusing you, you have to get out. Now, her friends never called the cops, which wouldn't have helped anyways, okay? They never called the cops. They never reported it to anyone in any way. And so what happens is she tells her friends, and then her friends are like, oh, my God, he's abusing you. You have to get out. You don't deserve that. And you're like, she's like, yeah, you're right, you're right. But then he apologizes. He gives her flowers or buys her a teddy bear, takes her out to dinner, and he's a sweet guy again. And so she stays. And then her friends get angry with her. And that's how he manipulates the situation. So then when she says, oh, you know, she's mad at me, and then these women will tell their abusive partner about the conversation. They'll show them. And it blows my mind why we do this, but we do. We show him, and then he takes that, and he's like, oh, well, she just doesn't like me. She's never been very nice to me. She's just trying to get in the middle of our relationship. She's trying to break us up. Is that what you want? You want us to break up? Well, no, I don't want us to break up. Well, then, you know, you have to stop listening to that friend of yours. Maybe you should just stop talking to her. She's obviously not a very good friend. So then the friend's mad at you, and then he gets you to turn on your friend. And this is how, and I know it sounds really complicated, but when you're in it, it just makes sense. Yeah, she's being, you know, she's being mean, and she's being vindictive, and she just doesn't understand the relationship we have. You know, he's right. She just doesn't like him, and that's her problem, not mine. She doesn't like him because he's hitting you, and you told her that he's hitting you. So your best bet is to get out of that relationship, but you can't. It's too hard. It's too complicated. It's too scary. And by this point, he's already got so much control over you. He knows exactly how to manipulate you, and I'm sorry, but they all do it the same way. They do. I'm sorry. I know I went off on a little rant there.
Well, and to top that off, if that didn't work, then the friend is hitting on the abuser.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
your friends will always, all of them, will always hit on the abusive partner.
Yeah.
They will always flirt with him. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, because he's just God's gift to women. Don't you know? And you're so lucky to have him because, look, all your friends want him, but you should stop talking to these friends because they're making your partner feel uncomfortable. And then there are a few women, but some will confront their friend. And their friend will be like, what the hell are you talking about? I don't like him. I don't like him at all. I don't even think you should be with him. And then as soon as they say something like that, it triggers something he said about her wanting to break you up. And everything he does is geared towards destroying every single relationship you have. And then when he's done destroying your relationships, he will take you and move you somewhere far away where you have no hope of getting any help, where you know no one, where you have nothing but him. And what do you do in that situation? What do you do? By that point, they're so isolated and so far out of reach of anyone that could help them. Those are the relationships that end the worst. When it gets that far, when it gets to that point, when you're so isolated in you know, the middle of nowhere, no one to help you, no one to talk to, alienated everyone from your life, it's scary. You know, and for the people who know someone in this situation, don't judge them. If they go back after they're telling you that they've been hit, be their friend. Stay close to them. Stay there. Be there for them. And you know what? I know it's not going to help anything, but call the cops because this is at least a way of letting the partner know that he can't get away with this, that there are people in your life that care, that there are people in the, you know, the abused woman's life that care enough that they're going to do something about it. I mean, doing nothing makes you no better than the abuser. You know, and I myself have been put in a situation where I've had to make that call. It took me 3 days of agonizing over what I was going to lose once I did it, and then I did it. And I lost the friend. But at least I stood up for her. At least I showed her that I cared. What can you do? I wasn't going to stand by and watch it happen. I take it very seriously. You know, most of my life was abuse.
the embassy. You're very, very far gone in thought.
Yes, very far in thought. I don't know what to say now because I'm just, you know, while we're talking, you kind of relive
the
times in your life where you thought you were nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing but everything to the abuser.
Yeah.
Which is very...
Well, and you're everything to the abuser, but you're never good enough for them.
At the same time, that's right.
Yeah.
So it was just a period in my life where I was a complete, can you say mess?
Yeah, you can. About as simple as it gets, you were a mess.
You know, and I didn't know where to turn. And anywhere I turned, it would just make it worse. There was no safe road. There wasn't. And even after that, you know, I left. And, of course, I continued to date and whatever. Yeah. And I still ended up with people that I shouldn't have been with.
Yeah.
But I got faster at noticing the triggers and the red flags.
Yeah.
Which is good. And you know, that part of my life is done.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. So what kind of relationship are you in today?
Today I have a really good relationship.
Does he support you?
Yes.
Is he controlling in any way?
Not at all.
Not at all. Is he pleasant and fun, and does he make you happy, and does he make you feel good about yourself?
Yes, all of those things.
Yeah. So how does it feel to finally be in a solid relationship?
You know, it's really amazing, but sometimes it still is way at the back of my mind somewhere.
Where you want to self-sabotage because if he's not hurting you or putting you down, then this isn't right.
Well,
but you're aware of this.
Though. Not that he's not, you know, maybe not that I'm, maybe sometimes I might think that I'm not worthy, maybe.
Yeah.
Or that I'm not sure if everything's okay.
Yeah.
Because it's quiet.
Yeah, because it's calm and quiet.
So, you know, and that, I've been out of that relationship for
7 years.
7 years now.
Yeah, that's how long we've known each other.
So it's a really long process, but you know what? It's worth it.
It's worth it. It's worth taking the trip. So we have to start closing the show now. So I just want to know if there's anything you want to offer to the listeners today that they can get in touch with you and maybe if you wanted to offer a discount on your coaching prices, that would be.
Yes. Anyone who's listened to the show today and who's found some guidance or would like to reach out, I'm available on Skype, and I have a shop in Sudbury on Notre Dame, and you know, I'll give you a consultation to see where we want to go, if you want to work with me. And so the first hour is free. If you listen to the show, just mention that you've heard the show. And, you know, we'll go from there. It's one step at a time.
Yeah, and the first step is getting help.
Yeah.
Because it's not a journey that anyone should have to take alone.
No, and I use different modalities like spirituality and art and coaching and, you know, but we will find something that will suit you and that will help you.
Right. So thank you so much for being on the show today, Lizanne, and sharing your story with us. It was an amazing show, and it was great to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
So if you or anyone you know is in an abusive relationship, please contact Lizanne LeClaire. You can find her at goldenjourney.ca. If you want to get in touch with me, work with me, I can be found at choicecoachingcanada.com. You can email me at katie@choicecoachingcanada.com or call me at 705-822-5139. I want to thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It was great to have you here with us and listening to, you know, what we had to say. And we look forward to speaking with you again. So tomorrow on the I Am Radio TV network, we have the Dr. Simone Show. So tune in tomorrow at 12 Eastern Time, 9 PST. And again, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. And I look forward to having another great show for you again in the next 2 weeks. Talk to you later. See you on the flip side. Love you.